Welcome to Build, Lead, Thrive, Voices of Andras Goggin, a bi-monthly podcast that features in-depth conversations with the people shaping Andras Goggin County. Each episode dives into personal stories, showcasing the leaders and entrepreneurs behind the region's economic and community vitality. I'm your host, Shanna Cox, President and CEO of the LA Metro Chamber. I'm joined by local talent, longtime friend, and our producer, Mark Turcotte. Together, we explore how incredible people, the voices of Andras Goggin, build, lead, and thrive while contributing to a better quality of life for all. Welcome back to Build, Lead, Thrive, Voices of Andras Goggin. I'm so excited because I'm joined with not just Auburn City Manager, but really long time, not old. That's not the word that I was
saying. Long time sounds nice.
A long time colleague and friend of mine, Phil Crowell. So Phil is Auburn City Manager currently, and he moved to that role after starting serving as the Assistant City Manager in 2018. What year did you become officially City Manager? I couldn't find it in the online records anymore.
It's not in the archives somewhere.
No, your current bio starts with you being made assistant city manager in 2018.
Yeah. I was those are COVID years.
I do, actually.
It's a long period. But
nope, I did all the research I could. 2020. So you're coming into 5 years as city manager.
I am. Yes.
Yeah, thanks for your longevity in that role. As a partner with you, I really appreciate it.
Yes.
That followed your retirement, which is insane to me, but you retired from the Auburn Police Department, where you served for 25 years.
I did.
The last 12 as chief of police. You began your law enforcement career in 86 during your service as a military police officer in the U.S. Army.
Yes.
You've quite the history, sir. First, thanks you for your service.
I look really young, though.
You
don't
do.
I?
You so. Do. But I don't. We'll talk later about your moisturizing.
Okay,
secrets,
that's great.
There's something working
It's a full regime.
Yeah, you started as a patrol officer in 1993. In 2006, you were promoted to chief of police. I see a little bit of a trend there as leadership cycles kind of spike for you every time you move into any role. In addition to that, not just law enforcement, not just city management, like that's not enough, you have numerous local board affiliations, including Auburn PAL, Promise Early Education Center, Andwell Health Partners, formerly Andras Goggin Home Health and Hospice, and the Maine Chiefs of Police Association. You're a graduate of the FBI National Academy, Session 218.
Yes.
And you earned a Bachelor's of Science degree in Criminal Justice from UMaine in Augusta. Anything that I missed in that long list of accolades?
That sounds pretty accurate.
You live in Auburn with your wife, and you have two adult children, one of whom just got married.
Yes, both kids are married off now, but yes, one really recent in October.
So as a mom of four who range from 18 to 20, I'm like this in-between land. So your life goals for me, when they get married, do you feel like there's a certain amount of transition of responsibility that I'm waiting for so deeply?
Small, but it's a transition. So you don't stop worrying. Don't stop. Yeah.
I think that's the thing that's terrifying as a parent to realize. Like, when your kids are in diapers, you're like, okay, 18 years. And then you start to realize by the time they're like 12 that, like, this isn't going to end at 18. Not how I care, not the things that happen in their life or the role that we have as parents. You're a parent. You know, Mark.
I do. What's your secret for marrying them off and getting them out of the house?
You know, it's a whole detailed long-term event, but I really leave it up to my wife.
Okay.
That's what I've done. So.
That's a trend, too.
That's right. Yes.
Well, that releases you and puts me in the hot seat, so that's great.
I like it. I'm all for it. Thanks, Phil.
That works out really well for you. It's been incredible to watch you in your career.
Well, and thanks.
Yeah, I've just...
And the same for you. I think that's just it. We've been crossing paths.
Mucking around in this community, right. Doing things we care about.
Yeah. I think since my officer-friendly days.
Yeah. I mean, you're still friendly.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I do too. It's greatly appreciated by me. We'll touch back on that. I pulled forward some what feels like really long time ago thinking. So we'll come back to that. Because before we move into that, we have a little segment that we like to call Getting to Know You. Are you ready, Mark?
I am.
Our best singing voices.
getting to know you.
Getting to know.
That's all we've got. We haven't worked up a jingle for this segment. I'd like to think that this is becoming the hallmark of what is one of the most exciting segments.
Most of our feedback from these episodes has been complaints about our singing.
Yeah.
Really?
So, yeah.
I'm shocked.
Thank you. I thought that sounded really polished.
You're getting there.
Yeah. A couple 20, 30 more episodes.
You'll be all over. That's right.
Somebody's going to pay to create a jingle for us. They're like, yes. It's really good, except.
I think that's your ulterior motive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah. Sponsor the segment. Bring in a singer, please.
Yeah. Getting to Know You is a segment where we ask our guests fun, personality-revealing questions to help listeners learn about and connect with our guests on a personal level. Before we get into the deeper questions, this is like the appetizer before the main course.
So, Phil.
Yes.
What's your favorite way to spend a weekend in Androscoggin County?
I do like staying local as best as I can. So.
Same. And it's not just because I hate long drives.
Right, yeah.
It's because it's awesome here.
It's just nice,
yeah.
Right? And so my wife and I do like to explore, and we look for just fun, foodie-type places and spend the afternoon and seek those out and then see what's around that area.
That's my favorite, the kind of, like, stumble upon. I like any place that I can park my car, get out, and within 10 or 15 minutes of wandering around, I can ideally find an antique shop or some used. I like, give me yesteryear's gems and the ability to, I think it's really the, like, finding something. It's the finding part.
Right.
Like, I don't want to walk into your perfectly sparsely merchandised current. No, I want to rummage. Mm-hmm. I want to rummage and find a deal, something that no one else has. That's
right.
So that coupled with anything tasty.
Yes.
If you can put it in the pastry category, then double points, but anything tasty.
Yeah, there's a bakery nearby. I like to check that out.
Right?
So.
I'm a huge bakery fan. And we have great bakeries here. I recently explored a community in southern Maine that I won't put on the hot seat, but went to one of their local bakeries and was like, oh, this is going to be as good as the Italian bakery. And it was not. It was not. And I was like, I'm going home. Bring me back to my hometown bakeries. Thanks so much.
I might have been at Italian Bakery today.
Yeah, so, see? Yes. I mean, Italian Bakery, Grant's Bakery, Nutty Nettie's. Like, we have so many great homemade things that, it just doesn't compete. This one I'm excited to learn. What is a surprising skill or talent that you have outside of work?
Boy, I don't know if I have a lot of skills. I got a hole in one once in golf.
Really?
That's my claim
to
fame.
Mini golf or real golf?
It was real golf. It was in Turner. It was at the Highlands.
That counts.
Mansell Taylor. I don't know if you remember. Mansell Taylor owned. New Fab. So I was with him and a few others, and I actually got a hole in one.
Wow.
So it's not really a skill. It was more. I wasn't.
A little bit of luck.
I didn't even know I got it until I was looking for my ball. And it was in
the
cup.
Did you start in the woods and then you were like, what? It made it into the cup.
I always seem to overshoot, so I was kind of behind the green looking for it, and someone let me know my ball was in the cup.
Well, inside, because you don't, we hold an annual golf tournament. It raises funds for scholarships for adults and high school seniors in Androscoggin County. We've been doing it for 25 years. Auburn always puts a team in.
I love playing in it.
Occasionally, the Auburn team is one of the teams we have to go looking for around the
Absolutely.
End of the... So you
we're really there for fun. That's what we're there.
We love that, and so, that's what you should be there for. But so you didn't get your hole of one during one of our tournaments, huh?
Not during one of the tournaments.
No car was won, no cash prize.
Won. Right.
You did have a witness, though.
I did have. I had three witnesses.
That matters.
So.
That matters. We'll chalk that up as a surprising skill. For folks who are listening, you can't see it, but how tall are you, Phil?
6'5".
Yeah.
Ish.
So, I mean, I feel like you could swing, like the centrifugal force, the length
yeah,
of your
reach.
Yeah,
there's no consistency to what I do, but I can hit it some distance.
Distance is fine. It's accuracy.
Right.
That's
right.
Well, we'll count it anyway. Who's been your biggest professional influence? and you need to take a minute because you have quite the professional history that we just covered.
Yeah.
What's your biggest professional influence?
You know, I think that it's probably been a culmination of numerous individuals over the years. Most recent, Peter Creighton was our previous city manager. And I really hesitated about moving from the police work to city manager. I had done a stint at that, kind of filling in back in, I think it was 2011.
Was it interim?
Yeah, well, yeah, I was still chief, but I was just filling in until they could fill the vacancy. And I was like, you know, I don't know if that's really where I want to be at. And then I met Peter, and
he's incredible. He is incredible.
Yeah, what a great job he did for Auburn when he came in, and so I think most recent, like I said, culmination of a lot of great individuals over the years. Most recently, certainly spending a couple years with Peter in that role, and just he has just a great demeanor and approach to city government.
Super measured.
Absolutely.
And thoughtful.
Yes.
I had the good fortune. I mean, I've lived here for 18 years, and so I got to see both Peter and then Ed Barrett, his counterpart in Lewiston, do their job well in so many ways for a better part of a decade. But when I came to the chamber, they were both ex officio board members for us, and I got the opportunity to come into this role and find my way in this role under their leadership before they both retired pretty much at the same time. And they're just great men.
I think Peter was on your selection committee.
Yeah. He was. He was. I like to think that turned out well.
Yeah, I think so.
5 years later of, I think that that's
right.
I think it's going well. I'm enjoying it. They haven't kicked me out yet, so I think I'm okay. As we dive into our main course, bear with me as I pull forward a quote that I was excited to find.
Sure.
Of yours. A slightly younger you.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think a much younger, but a slightly younger. So the first time that you and I met, just to take it back kind of fully, I was a Head Start parent, single mom of three kids. I served on our Head Start Policy Council, and because of that, also the board of directors. Head Start at the time now goes by Promise Early Education Center, which is the Head Start program for Androscoggin County. I come from a family of first responders. I was raised by EMTs. I was raised by volunteer firefighters in a community that only has a volunteer fire department. And so I grew up in first responders. It's always been like family gatherings and summer gatherings, and like that's an environment that's really familiar to me. But then I moved to this community where I didn't know any of the first responders, and you have a 24-hour paid police force and 24-hour paid fire department, all things that are just bananas from the small town that I come from, just unachievable goals. And didn't know any of our EMS folks, and then got to know you through our work with Head Start, and you were officer friendly, right? Like you were very endearing to me. And I thought you offered such a refreshing perspective from law enforcement that I hadn't really heard articulated before when you spoke about the importance of early interventions to individual and community level outcomes. And I found this great quote from you that you offered to the Council for a Strong America. I don't know if you can put a time frame on this. Anyway, I'll give you the quote first and maybe it'll sound familiar. You said, if they had had the opportunity to participate in high-quality early learning programs such as Head Start, pre-K, and childcare, they might have had a better chance to succeed, not only in school, but in life beyond school, and not turn to crime as their only viable option. Research has proven what law enforcement knows from our own experiences. High-quality early learning programs help kids, especially those who are at risk, get started on the right path in life. It also saves money and helps keep our communities safer in the long term. Maine's youngest children deserve everyone's support, and you are proud to advocate for them, along with your fellow law enforcement leaders who are members of Fight Crime Invest in Kids. I've often called on that wisdom. I've often taken the intent from those words and our experiences, and other times that I've heard you testify to the same in various ways in the state, as I make sense of for myself and try to explain to others and help them make sense of why investing in early childhood education and experience is important to our businesses and to our communities, which is a case I find myself making often in this role. Roughly when was that, do you think? Right? Like 2018, 2019 maybe?
That was probably a lot earlier than that.
Really?
I think I've started doing work with Fight Crime Invest in Kids actually in 2007.
Oh, wow. So and you'd been doing it for a while when you educated me about it.
So, yeah, I'm not sure when that quote came, but yeah, certainly since then is when I first learned about this organization, and Maine Chiefs is very much involved in that.
Yeah.
You dig into the data and you start looking at what these outcomes that have been so successful in a lot of communities that they've made those early investments.
Yeah.
And you can't walk away from that without saying, we need to do something. And because this is really making differences here in our community.
Yeah. So then here's my question.
Sure.
For Auburn, what does this philosophy look like in action today?
Yeah.
Because I know you're doing it.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think we promote it. I mean, not me. I think the school, Auburn School Department, has done a great job promoting this over the years. They've actually made a lot of investments for early childhood education. But then we're taking it to a community level. Certainly doing it within our PAL Center.
Yeah.
We're doing with early drop-off and pick-up programs at our rec program as well.
Yeah.
Because we just know those are critical times and critical hours of the day that children should be engaged, well-supervised, and we need to create space for those things to happen.
I mean, I was 100% a 1980s latchkey kid. There was no programming in the town that I lived in. There was none of the resources that we have locally here. And I muddled through, in large part, I think, to Girl Scouts and part of what that imparted in my life and gave me for some tools, resources, and people to call on. But I know what that lack of programming and access looked like and the impact it had on a lot of my friends who are in very different places today than I am. And so I've just seen it firsthand. Talk a little bit about the PAL Center.
Yeah, I think...
I got to be there at the groundbreaking, which was a couple months ago and a pretty big deal.
It's exciting.
You've done so much to grow, not just you.
There's a whole team involved in that, and it's been exciting to be part of it. And, you know, you talked about being a latchkey, right?
Just to, like, put a number on that, I was 8 responsible for myself after school. I was 8 responsible for being home when there was a snow day. Like, I had 2 working parents. It's not like 14 and I had to make my own snack after school. It was a pretty early age.
And what we found within the police department, we found that before, kids would be able to go home, and yes, they would have to stay in their apartment or their home. And what transitioned around probably late 90s, early 2000 was that kids were actually locked out of their homes and apartments. They had to find something to do because no one was home and they weren't getting in.
Yeah.
And so that's when they would just be hanging out at parks or wherever.
Super awesome opportunities there.
Right. And so, and that's where, you know, I share this story all the time. That's where driving by the PAL, well, what's now the PAL Center area, was the gully, the basketball court.
Yeah.
And watching a couple kids just using a rock to play basketball.
Yeah.
There was nothing else there for them.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, we can do better than this. Mm-hmm. And that started the PAL Center. And a small building that was right there in that space that we converted over. And then we were serving 150 kids a day. And now that building's gone. And actually the new building is well underway. They have the roof up.
The walls roof is are up. That's great.
Walls are up. It's in almost all enclosed.
That's incredible in today's construction environment.
So it's exciting. We're ahead of schedule, which is unbelievable.
I'm going to invite you to knock on wood. You just don't say that about construction.
Yeah. I didn't say under budget. So. Yeah. but it's exciting. We're going to be opening the PAL Center definitely by August, so before school starts.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So we know that there's so much to love about Auburn. There are efforts in development and design in New Auburn, which I think just keeps being visible, whether it's the street design or Anniversary Park, the Rent-A-Kayak program, the new PAL Center that we're talking about, the incredible events on Main Street. We've got New Year's Eve Auburn coming up. You just did some holiday celebrations. You do Blues and Brews?
One of those.
Thank you. Anyway, it's beer and good music, so make your own name up. And that's just some of what is already known, right? Like what's visible, what people can see, what people can attribute. I think one of the aspects of my job that I love and that's incredible is I get exposure to all of the things that are in development and in the pipeline, and often less known or completely unknown. And to be clear, it is not because of who I am or the role that I have. It's because I serve on planning boards and I pay attention to city agendas and, you know, that it's there's no big secrets that are being kept. It's just that a lot of people don't know it. And I love that. I love knowing what's coming. And it is frustrating to me that we community leaders across the region don't do better at making them known. And it's not that we're hiding them. I think people have divided attention and a lot of things and priorities. But oftentimes I wish that people had a better sense of all of the things that are already underway, that permits have been approved for, that financing is done for, that groundbreaking, that or the, you know, the construction vehicles on that lot is an indication of things actually happening. And oftentimes people don't really register that something is happening until it is happened, past tense. And so what are some of the incredible but lesser known things on the horizon in Auburn?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's
ridiculous.
There's so many things that happen, and there's like years of planning to get to that. And so sometimes you're right. When somebody drives by and say, well, when did this happen?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, 4 years ago.
Yeah, it was at least some discussions that had started, some planning that had started. And, you know, we're about ready to launch our new comp plan initiative.
Nice.
And so, and those are exciting too. You know, I think that
I'm a policy wonk and nerd, and I live for a good comp plan. I know I'm not your average resident, but tell me more about your comp plan.
I didn't really know about comp plans until like 2010 as police chief. I started digging into this a little bit, and you know, when you're a department director, you're always wondering, all right, how do I get these initiatives forward?
Yeah.
You know, you just can't roll up onto a council meeting on a Monday night and say, by the way, could I have a couple million dollars for this initiative?
Got to fit in the framework.
And so you start laying the groundwork for this. Yeah. And so in 2010, we started laying the groundwork for the new public safety building. And we got it in the comp plan. We had a great conversation. It was over 150 people that were involved in that process. And so that laid the foundation for what now a referendum that got passed. And we're ready to start the architectural designs of this new public safety building for police and fire. So that's been a long time coming. Yeah. But it just shows you where 2010, that's when we first started having that conversation.
I remember the design charrettes and conversations around the new Auburn street design and about the traffic patterns and about increasing walkability. And I remember those conversations. I remember the community input conversations. I remember even though that was, 10, 8?
At least.
Years ago. You can now walk that. There's a park there. Those raised bumps.
Yes. Those get a lot of attention.
Can we just paint them fluorescent? I'm a big fan, just to be clear. But it doesn't mean I don't occasionally hit them at more speed than my suspension appreciates me hitting. They sneak up on you, Phil.
I did have somebody throw some paint. I don't know if you noticed. It's those little arrows. And then I heard, can you make it a different color? So when that one wears off, which it will after this plow season, right?
Yeah.
We'll put some color on it.
They're super effective. Yeah, don't get me wrong.
Oh, I've been caught off guard more than once. So, and then for some reason you hit that one, you forget the next one's right around the corner.
I don't know how. Like you get through the light and you start to pick up speed again. You're like, I definitely shouldn't have done that. Yeah. No, that's exactly right.
So we do have a lot of projects underway.
Yeah, talk about
them. We have just the infrastructure projects. You know, Engine 2, which is in New Auburn, a new fire station. The designs of that is wrapping up. That will be built right behind the current one on South Main Street.
Oh, nice.
And so I believe that building was built in like 1920 or 30, somewhere around there.
Response infrastructure across the region is aging.
It's aging.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's been so much research and information that's come out regarding the importance of separating living space for firefighters with equipment and materials that they just came out of the fire with.
Yeah.
Those carcinogens that are on those
equipment. You don't want to sleep next to it.
And now you're sleeping next to it. And when you have a building as small as Engine 2, it's a postage stamp. that's what it's been like.
Yeah.
And so to be able to provide a really well-done quality space.
Healthy.
Not elaborate, right? Because we're local government. We're not going to do that, but we're going to make nice space.
So there isn't a sauna and pool in the basement?
No, there's not.
All right. Well, we'll just put that
rumor
to bed.
That's right. So we have that facility. Public safety is under design. PAL Center is being constructed. We just acquired 67 Kitty Hawk. And so this is one where to save a decent amount of money on the public safety project, we needed to do something with a temporary location for the fire department.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so we were able to acquire this building. We will move the fire department out there temporarily, and we'll change our response areas with the other apparatus in the community. And then when fire moves into the new building, that'll be our secondary public works building. And so having public works on both ends of the city, people don't realize that. Auburn's the largest in square miles, the largest city east of the Mississippi, ninth largest in the country. And
60, lots of roadways.
Tons of roadways.
How much do you know the number?
It's 500 lane miles or something like that. So I'm probably off on that a little bit. 405.
Someone at Public Works is going to be like, it's 1,200.
Right. Yeah. I probably said it wrong.
It's and an so, astronomical yeah. amount. That's the technical term.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's yeah. a lot of roads. And so, and a lot of coverage. And yeah. so having Public Works location so we can have equipment that can operate out of the southern end of the city yeah. as well as the northern end of the city. Just as good efficiency.
Folks can forget very easily how far Auburn goes, particularly if you are coming from Lewiston and then you go through Auburn and decide to continue past the interstate and just take that road straight through till you get to Gray. Good part of that travel, you're still in Auburn.
Oh, yeah.
I think yeah. it's very easy to forget that when you're like, oh, Auburn is in yeah. town. It's by the river. It's, you know, by Walmart. It's the shopping district. It is so much. You have so much agricultural land
absolutely. Yeah.
within your municipal boundaries. Yeah. And that's amazing.
Yeah. A little story. When I first came on the police department, you're the new person. You get South Auburn. New
yeah.
Auburn, South Auburn. That's just
they're not
going to
give you the active.
That's right. They throw you the keys and off you go. Don't get lost. Listen to your radio.
Watch out
and
for the cows.
So, right. And so it's night shift, of course, because that's where you go when you're new as well. So I'm driving down Pownall Road. I'm going. Next thing you know, I'm like, boy, I think I've gone a little bit too far. And then I see the Pownall Post Office, and I realize, all right, I've gone a little too far out of the boundary. Hopefully the radio doesn't go off until I get back in. But it just shows you, Auburn is massive.
It really
and
is.
So I wasn't that far across the boundary
yeah.
when I was there.
Well, and so my kids have done a lot of sports over the years. I feel like I have kids coming out my ears, and they played all the different sports. And so we would do a lot of your sports complexes out up Broad Street and in that kind of like New Auburn. And if you go out that way, it goes.
It does.
And goes yeah. and goes. We went and visited. We did prom photos mm-hmm. in advance of a if that's a rite of passage you haven't had yet, listeners, be excited for that. It's the most awkward experience ever. Group of teenagers that don't really know each other because they're all just randomly matched up with dates and you're at someone else's house checking curls and shoes. And I have boys, so they're really excited. Anyway, we went out there for prom photos, and they live in Auburn, and I just kept driving and just kept driving. I was like, I'm not sure that I'm in the right spot. And I was. It's a huge city.
It is. And, you know, that's one of the things that makes it difficult about Auburn with being able to define what neighborhood you live in.
Yeah.
You know, Auburn, I think we had a city councilor once that said, Auburn's a tapestry of neighborhoods. And I think that was a good definition of yeah. just how, you know, now you have some people who, they'd live nowhere near New Auburn, but I'm part of New Auburn.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, let's look at the map. I don't think you really are, but it's, but people will claim it. And so, but just trying to define neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So you have that sense of belonging.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's the thing that we work at. We try to do that. I think
you do that well.
We're having conversations now about can we be more engaged with neighborhood groups mm-hmm. so that they have that ownership. They have that voice
yeah.
as, okay, why is this intersection changing? Why is this stop sign going up? Mm-hmm. Whatever it might be, is there a way that we can communicate? Because we talked earlier about engagement, right?
Yeah.
And so how did this plan just come about? Well, if we can be more engaged, we can kind of be on the boots,
I think that's on the ground. I think that's a challenge for municipalities, every municipality, because we serve 16 communities across Androscoggin County here at the Chamber. You know, I live in one community, I'm active in a number of communities, and at work I'm engaged with all the communities. And the reality is that when you're charged with engaging people, I'm charged with engaging people. I need to engage the business community, I need to engage municipal leaders in each of those counties. When that's something that you are tasked with and you're trying to do equitably and thoughtfully, I think oftentimes community members can come back and say, oh, you pay more attention to the downtown, or you pay more attention to this neighborhood or that neighborhood. And the reality is your engagement efforts need to be matched by grassroots organic efforts from the neighborhood. And in my prior role, I owned my own consulting business, and I worked with a neighborhood group in Auburn who was really active and, you know, got a lot of engagement with, from, by the city. And the reality is like that happened for that group and that neighborhood because of the actions that group was taking, not because the city favored that neighborhood or that group. But then there's these other pockets of community that don't have a sense of belonging or don't have a history to create those relationships. And I think it can create the perception that there's like inequitable or favored treatment. And the reality is, And I say this with love and tenderness to all of the communities, all of them, not just Androscoggin County, but if you feel like your neighborhood isn't getting the attention it deserves, do something about it. Organize your neighborhood, have a block party, meet your neighbors, and engage from that place of being in some collective space. Because for those of us who are trying to connect with communities by geography or population or interest or industry, if there's nothing there that's organized, it makes it really challenging on our part. And
absolutely. Yeah. You know, I remember my years trying to create neighborhood watch groups at the police department. And we'd start a few here and there. And when, you know, the problem went away, then the attendees went away. Except for New Auburn. New Auburn nails it every single time. They are engaged.
What they do around Halloween. Yeah. My kids went to the Boys and Girls Club for a number of years. And that was a big piece of me being able to, I don't know, make advancements in my career. Just people don't realize how important it is for working parents to really strengthen their self-sufficiency, being dependent on aftercare and vacation care. And so big fan of New Auburn from those days. And New Auburn's Neighborhood Association has been killing it for a long time. They do a great job.
Yeah, they do. And because they come to the table saying, we want to do this.
They have a vision. They
great.
Have an ask.
Because guess what? We want to be able to do those types of things. Yeah. And so we'll put the resources, we'll put the staff, we'll put whatever we need to, and we'll come alongside.
Yeah.
And that's what's key. It's coming alongside. You start some of these programs up, you might be the front face of this, and then the goal is you back away and you let the neighborhood take this over.
Yeah.
And so they are engaged. They know what's happening. They get regular updates because we have staff that rotate into the neighborhood watch groups. They go into the United New Auburn Association. Yeah. They're speaking at those events. So they're very well aware.
Yeah. So. And they aren't afraid to ask for what they want. They have a vision for what they want their neighborhood to look like. And I mean, they came out in force and really informed a lot of what we are seeing in the development in New Auburn today was things that people from that neighborhood were saying. We want it to be walkable. You've had like a barbershop turnover, and then you've had a new barbershop that's like young person owned, and it's been there for years now. Like that can see you've got two diners. I'm a big fan of both, right in that neighborhood. And I think the longevity of those businesses in that neighborhood is because of their connection to the neighborhood, which creates the support in turn for the businesses. And that's what I'm striving to see in all the places that we work in.
But what's nice to see is the master plan for New Auburn master plan. Their fingerprints, the neighborhood's fingerprints, are all over it.
Mm-hmm.
And because you go to these events and you hear people talk. I've seen that in the plan.
I asked for that bench.
Right.
That table's there because...
That's right.
Well, and that kind of ownership is what keeps that table clear, what makes sure there's not graffiti on that signage. Like, that ownership within a neighborhood really does have impact. And as somebody who... I serve on my local planning board. When there's citizens that are engaged in saying, this is our vision, this is what we want the comp plan to look like, this is what we want that neighborhood plan to look like, when they're advocating for that in that process... And it becomes the plan, and it's getting worked from by the city. It's not done, right? Those same citizens can either come or not back and say, how are you allocating funding this year? What part of the plan's being implemented this year? And that kind of consistent drumbeat of, great, what's next? Great, what's next? How can we partner? What's next? Is what makes the implementation happen. And I've seen that all over. And so... I love seeing that. I think it makes such a difference in how you feel growing up there, raising your family there, owning your business there. I think it's so vital.
Yeah, it's essential for community members to leverage their relationship with their elected officials.
Yeah.
They are the policymakers. They will champion. You know, Lake Grove Park is probably a great example of this. You had counselors that said, yes, let's make an impact at Lake Grove Park. And in doing that... We probably have several hundred people a day that are visiting Lake Grove Park.
They love it.
They do.
They're huge fans of it.
Yeah. It's a great space. You're right near the water. Mm-hmm. We have a beautiful state-of-the-art playground.
Mm-hmm.
We have kayaks, canoes, anything you want to take out and go into the water, it's right there.
See?
In the outlet.
See, that's incredible. So. Yeah. It is a really good blueprint for what it can look like to partner. To see the vision of your community realized, which I think's amazing. So that brings me to a theme. So I think it's like 6 or 7 episodes in, and organically in each of those episodes with people we have talked to in media and in arts and culture, in business, in community, there's something that comes up organically in each of the conversations. So this one you can blame on me. It's inorganic. I prompted this conversation today. But there is this thing that keeps coming up that I'd like to hear kind of your thoughts on. People keep lifting up that the perception of both Auburn and Lewiston by people born and raised here tend to lean more negatively than those who choose to live here. That people who have come to this region and made it their home tend to see the opportunity and the potential and what's already been realized of that potential a little more readily, shall we say, than our generationally born neighbors. How does perception impact your work and goals as city manager? And what do you think can be done to shift that perception?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting how I think in some ways you're correct. I can see those who choose to come to this region, they're excited about what they see because it's new for them. Or maybe they're coming from an area where that didn't exist, or it just feels closer and less, depending on where they're coming from, it could be something that would be a challenge to be able to go and visit that space.
Yeah.
But I do feel, having been born and raised.
Push it back,
so
Phil.
I do feel like there are a lot who just take a lot of value in their community. And, you know, being with the city for over 30 years, I get to interact with a lot of residents over those years, and they take a lot of pride in their community, and but they may not be the same people that you necessarily hear on social media or maybe attending certain events. And so, but I do think it's a mix.
Yeah.
So I'll push back a little bit. I think it's a mix.
Well, I mean, I think there's a nuance in there that's actually really valuable for you to lift up, which is, I think there are plenty of people who are born and raised in our two communities who do love. It's not like everybody who was born here hates it, and only new people like it.
Right.
But I do feel like the overwhelmingly, when there are consistent kind of negative Nancys or Neds out there, they come from the homegrown population. Like, it's very rare to hear people sharing negative perceptions who are new to the area within the last 10 years, for example, which is long enough to have seen some ebbs and flows and hard times locally, right? It's not, thank you, because it's not that people who were born here don't also love here, right? Mm-hmm. But it is that the majority of the people who criticize or hold up a negative perception of here, anecdotally, I don't have data, Phil. We haven't pulled this.
Right.
I don't know what to tell you. But anecdotally, do seem to come from a native-born population. And I've got thoughts on that, but what sense do you make of that? And how do we shift that? Because if you listen to all of our previous episodes, it almost comes up consistently in every episode that, like, the thing that will help us as a region unlock our next stage of growth or allow us to get more hotels or have more investment is around this perception piece. And what does it look like to, not that you're not working on that every day, and I say that knowing that you are, because same, but what does that look like? What sense do you make of it?
Yeah, I think we have to be really purposeful in how we approach initiatives. You know, you're a change agent. We've seen that. I think the chamber has certainly been a great example of that. And I try to do the same thing within the city of Auburn.
Yeah.
But we do it in a way that we're purposeful on how we go about it. And because not everybody likes change.
No.
And so now how do you...
No, they don't.
How do you bring them along so that they see value in what's happening and they're willing to understand that there's a need for this change in a lot of ways, and how can they get that buy-in?
Mm-hmm.
And because
how can they be part of it or feel like they're leading it?
Yes.
So that,
Or that it's not going to strip away everything they've known and loved.
And their identity. Because there's a piece of identity wrapped up in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just building it, you know, we have a beautiful new high school.
Oh, your auditorium.
It's gorgeous.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just,
people who have not seen that new high school,
it's incredible.
See it. Yeah. Inappropriate times.
Yes.
I don't want people to show it.
Yeah. Not at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday during school. Gotcha.
But even the high school, because you have someone who was like, I went to high school there.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to see that change.
Yeah.
It needed to change.
You did a great... Let me just say, I've I've been a fellow and student of leadership and collaborative leadership models for a really long time. And something that I would hold up as a case example to my peers that endeavor in that area of knowledge, you guys did a transition and closure around Edward Little, like case book example of a beautiful, thoughtfully planned transition. Right. You really nailed it.
They did a great job. Yeah. The team that was part of that, where you actually...
You allowed people to say goodbye.
You come back in like and say goodbye. That's right.
That's not small. That is a really... And a really important... For people to embrace change, they need closure.
That's right.
And I think oftentimes that step gets missed of acknowledging what you're leaving behind. And what does that mean? And how do you manage to bring forward the pieces of that that are important to you that allows you to change, to grow? And... Yeah. It gets skipped a lot, and it really sets a lot of initiatives back, and you guys nailed that. You did it so perfectly.
Yeah, it was great. You know, having graduated from EL as well, you know, being part of that.
And, what year?
I am really young. I graduated 86. I am young.
You're a baby.
So, but yeah, you know, those are, it's being purposeful, right? And it's ensuring that you are taking the time to listen to what other concerns are before you just steamroll something out and say, but you know, we know better, right? We're the government. We're here to help, you know? And so
people love hearing that.
They love that.
Love
so,
that.
but it's about coming alongside and saying, look, this is, you know, I talk to my team. I have an incredible team. I don't think
you
I
really
said that
do.
Yet. And so
you did, but you're welcome to say it as many times as you need to, because you really do.
It's an incredible team.
Yeah.
And really it's encouraging them to say, look, let's make sure we've done everything before we just steamroll something out.
I think, because I know that you give people credit for this. I know you recognize and acknowledge this, but for listeners who might not fully appreciate, it takes your team's ability to recognize what those steps are, to pay attention to them in the first place. Because I've seen lots of people who don't think they're steamrolling.
Right.
We gave a 60-day notice. We put it in the paper. We let you know what we're going to do. We've given you plenty of opportunity in advance. They don't know what those steps are to embrace them. And that is where you guys excel. Just to really name that.
It is
more complex than people don't think about it.
It's very easy to say, we met the letter of the law.
Check those boxes.
And we did our posting in the paper, right?
Yeah.
We were talking about an initiative that the council is working on right now for a property tax assistance program for seniors. And so staff has really been working through this, wrestling with it. How do we make sure we deliver this in a way that it's something that people can achieve, right?
Yeah.
We don't want to just put a program out there that, no one's going to be able to qualify, whatever it might be. And so we really worked through it today just to talk about, okay, when could somebody actually apply? What do they have to bring in for that? What does that look like for them? And doing it in a way that where we make sure that we are capitalizing on this initiative. Council's the policymakers. We need to go and deliver it.
Yeah.
And so just working through that. But that's just one example of let's make sure we do it well and not just throw it out there.
I appreciate that. And I will echo again, knowing what doing it well looks like is the distinguishing factor. Because I think there's a lot more to that than people recognize. And I appreciate the care you and your team put into that. I get to work with amazing professionals in the city of Auburn, who I'm grateful for, Liz and Jen and Jay and Glenn and so many others. I really appreciate.
You recently worked with the fire chief quite a bit.
I love him.
Bob is super.
I should call him Chief Chase if I was to, Bob.
Yes.
It's Bob.
Right.
And I know I spoke out to you during some of that process, but his integrity and his approach to leadership, I got a really intimate view of that during some of the planning work. And I have spent years working with high-level professionals, C-suite professionals, department heads across the state, and a whole bunch of different areas. And people are people, regardless of title, first and foremost. But some people do get wrapped up in titles. And there is, I think, just Bob really displayed to me the culture of leadership that Auburn embraces. And you don't get people like that treating other people that way in the best ways possible if it's not a belief system that's valued by everybody.
Absolutely.
And so I reached out to him first to say thank you. And then I immediately called you and said, you better know you have an amazing person. And that I think he's incredible. So you feel free to send this episode to Bob.
No, it does. It takes team. It takes a team to really identify how will this be perceived in the community.
Yeah.
How can we not fast track this? How can we make sure? It's not that sometimes we don't have to roll things out quickly. Yeah. And when we do, we try to communicate it the best we can.
Yeah.
But it's just being thoughtful because for some people, they've lived in this community a long time and they see something that might be a threat. And if it's a threat, then there's an immediate opposition to it. And so how do we bring that about in a way where, okay, we need your involvement. We might be starting out here looking like this, but with your involvement, that could change.
Yeah.
And it could be something that they could really get behind.
So that was one of my favorite moments. He really, over the years in our work, and even predating my role at the Chamber, right? Because I was working with neighborhood groups and I was working with initiatives in Auburn and Lewiston. And, you know, my history goes back and I've seen that so consistently over the years. But yeah, shout out to Chief Chase.
That's right.
Shout out to him because I appreciate him a ton.
Our closing segment is Looking Back, Leading Forward, a reflective closing where we invite our guests to share advice or insights they would give to their younger self or to those with big ambitions in business or community leadership.
My question for you as we take our listeners out today, what's one lesson or piece of wisdom that you would share with someone aiming to make an impact? You've had significant impact.
Well, I appreciate that.
And you're not done.
I really have been blessed to be with the city for over 30 years. Yeah. And just being able to be at the table when certain things are occurring. And I think the advice that I was given at one point is be present and get yourself at the table.
Yeah.
Because if you're not making your voice heard, then you can't come back and be upset about how something might have transpired or where it landed. And so I've tried to do that. You know, I think a good example is a vacancy at the city manager level, 2011. I said, sure, I'll help out.
I'll do that.
You know, I can step in and try to do what I can, right? Yeah. And I did the same. I was a detective and a vacancy came up for deputy chief. And I was like, well, I'm bypassing like two positions. That's not something you should do. But I applied anyway because I thought process would be beneficial for me.
Yeah.
Right? Let me go through this process.
Yeah, you'll learn. And then when it's your turn, you'll be ready.
Right? Let me know what they want to see.
How'd that work out for you,
Phil? Let them know that I'm interested. And then I ended up getting the position.
Weird.
And so, you know, so it's being willing to, even though you might have fear, you might have some anxiety
or risk-taking in this advice.
Yeah, just step into it and put your, be vulnerable. Step in and see where it goes. And I've been able to do that. And I've been able to do it because I have great people around me. I don't say this enough, but my wife is a tremendous supporter.
You don't say that enough. Go ahead and say it again.
She's amazing and has a ton of wisdom. And she's been a great coach with me along my career. Yeah. And I couldn't ask for anything better. But I think that for that person that's looking for that, how do I get engaged? How do I get involved? How do I demonstrate leadership? Hmm. It's going ahead and being vulnerable and stepping into it. And not going into it saying, I have all the knowledge or I have all the information and, you know, listen to me. But it's about being one more voice at that table.
You've done such a great job over the years, even just in my peer relationship with you, at articulating leadership as you just did. And I think, I just had a conversation with a colleague recently on this topic, but I don't think we talk about leadership enough. Right. You do an incredible job talking about leadership. You've supported others learning about leadership. You did LeaderCast forever and actively embrace leadership as a topic, as a goal, as a learning endeavor. I think I talk to a lot of folks who just believe leadership is either something you're born with, like, oh, you're a born leader, or leadership is something that you end up with, right? That it's not a goal, that you don't work at it, that it doesn't come from your actions, but instead comes from like XYZ steps that leads to, you know, a specific thing. And you've always done such a great job recognizing leaders of all stripes and types that aren't necessarily attached to their title or their kind of I would say, like, gifted leadership, because there's certain titles that, like, if you end up in that role, you end up in that job, then you are, by definition, a leader, right?
Right.
City manager might be one. Chief might be one. But the reality is, and I witnessed this, I think you ended up in those roles because you were leading. You didn't become a leader because you got the role, right? Like, that's, I just think it, and you articulate it in such a way that that advice is really important advice, and I wish it was shared more often out there in the world in general, whether it's in places of faith or in communities or around kitchen tables, not just at work. It's not, leadership for me has never been a work conversation. Leadership is not about a career choice. Sometimes it can show up that way, but there are incredible leaders who are leading outside of their career, and then they go to work and, you know, they're an assistant level, whatever, whatever, and they don't think of themselves as a leader at work, and others might not either, and it doesn't matter because that's not how or where they lead. Leading is an action. Right?
And that's right. Yeah.
You've always done such an incredible job putting voice to that.
I appreciate that. No, and I just, like I said, I've just been given some great opportunities too. And just, you know, one thing that I do with my directors now, I've encouraged every one of them to be not just in their professional affiliations,
yeah,
to be a leader, to get on boards, do those things, mm-hmm, but also get engaged in the community as well.
Yeah.
Serve on United Way, serve in other mm-hmm areas that, you know, they may not necessarily see as an opportunity for them, but go out and do it, because that's, yeah, a good representation of our community, and it brings, I get more out of being on the boards that you listed earlier.
Yeah.
I've taken back so many great things from,
same,
being on those boards, and so, and I've not just the knowledge that I've learned in them, but the relationships,
yeah,
that have been developed by being on these boards with individuals that I probably would never have crossed paths.
No, you almost certainly you would never, right?
So for young leaders, mm-hmm, and we've seen this. I mean, I think the Chamber does a great job of nurturing young leaders.
Thank you.
So,
we work hard at it.
And seeing them engaged and involved, mm-hmm, and being part of that, and being able to go to the Findest Under 40. And so
wasn't that incredible?
Seeing a lot of that happen.
There were 3 babies under 6 in,
yeah,
that room.
Yeah.
And for me, huge win.
Absolutely.
If we can have rising professionals and rising leaders who are younger feel like they can bring their family, that their family should come because they're proud, and that it is a place that invites and it is inclusive for children, we're not going to engage our rising leaders and younger professionals if we're not doing that.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Like if it is a, I have to find childcare to be engaged instead of I can be engaged exactly as I am at this stage in my life, we, the Chamber, we businesses, we community are the ones who lose out on amazing people. And so, yeah, that was like a secret win for me that night as I looked around that room. And what I loved is that it, more often than not, it was babies on the dad because mom,
right,
was being recognized.
Yes,
oh, I loved,
true,
it.
Yes.
It was,
yeah,
one of my favorite things that, yeah, night. It got me all squealy on the inside.
Yeah, that was a great night.
Wasn't it? So. Wasn't it? Congratulations to your winner.
Yes, Kelsey.
Yeah, so. Who, she's a rock star.
She is a rock star.
Yeah.
There's a perfect example, right? Kelsey's,
yes,
engaged in her municipal affiliation that has, mm-hmm, to do with, she's our finance director, folks. She's Kelsey Earle. And so Kelsey started with us, I think, in the clerk's office.
Yeah, when she was like 10, apparently.
Yeah, and then went to the city manager's office as an executive assistant,
yeah,
in the finance department, and now finance director. But she's also on United Way.
Yeah.
She's engaged in the community.
She's a professional
badass. She does
things
in her community,
yeah,
Mechanic Falls, right?
Yeah.
So she's engaged there as well with the school board. And,
yeah,
so that's really important. It's important for business owners,
yeah,
managers, leaders to say, you know, when we bring on people,
mm-hmm,
we need to carve out time so that they can be engaged and involved,
yeah,
in these opportunities and not make it feel like, oh, now I'm just adding another 20 hours to my work, mm-hmm, week. No, let's carve out that time within, mm-hmm, their work week to be able to do and represent.
Yeah. I feel like just a moment ago you said you've been lucky and given a lot of opportunities. And while that may be true, you have found ways to give those opportunities to others since you've been in all the roles that you've been in, and that impact has a ripple effect that people are going to talk about 40 years from now remembering you, frankly.
Wow. Thanks.
Keep
no,
that
just,
up.
Yeah, And I hope I have 40 more years to give at it.
Yeah. Right? So, yeah. So you can retire for a third time?
That's right.
Yeah. I got into the wrong field. I should have been in a place like no one does pensions anymore. And public service, man, you guys are
25
smart.
Years, no age.
Listen, so. I know. I have a friend who's going to be fully retired at 45. I got 3 military family members, and they will be retired, fully pensioned at 42, figuring out what their next stage of life is going to look like
right. If
they want to.
Right.
I am 44. I have not achieved any of those goals. Bill, thank you so much for taking time with us today.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. This has been great. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. If you enjoyed this, be sure to give a shout out to Auburn and all of their incredible staff, Phil included. But also, like us, subscribe us, follow this. Comment on some of the folks you'd love to hear us interview, because I've got a great list, but I don't know who I don't know, and I'd love to meet them.